3, 2, 1, and we are back, Julie Harris.
Yes, and many of you have asked about your listings that don't sell right away. Some of them are selling right away, some of them with multiple offers, but what happens when you feel like you're stuck with one, when your sellers don't know what's going on, whether that means after a week you're panicking, or it's been a month, or heaven forbid, it's been several months, what do you do about it? So this podcast is per your special request, what to do when your listing doesn't sell.
Right. When, in other words, your special request from a lot of listeners who are asking those questions. Everything else is selling, but I have this listing, it's not selling, what should I do? So we're going to be creating a checklist for you. Use this checklist. Oh, by the way, you're going to want to print this checklist, and the only way you're going to be able to get access to it is going to harrisrealestatedaily.com. harrisrealestatedaily.com is our newsletter. It's our little art project, basically. We're going to be including a lot of new content just for harrisrealestatedaily.com subscribers. We're doing a lot of interviews, creating – we have somebody, Rick, who's going to start creating – maybe even 3 or 4 articles per week on AI for real estate, all kinds of great things, financial advice, health advice. We're just really going to, I think, pour everything into this newsletter, and it's going to be the natural extension for all of our podcast listeners, and it's free. That's something I think all of you guys will appreciate. So just go to harrisrealestatedaily.com and subscribe, or you can scroll down below and just subscribe to our newsletter, and you'll get an update every single day. So Julie, before we get to our first point, you had something you wanted to share.
Yes, just something that you can use for talking points, and I think it's interesting. Wait for the punchline at the end here. There was a recent survey by Realtor.com where it was actually a seller survey. They found that 85% of prospective sellers, self-identified prospective sellers, have been thinking about selling for 1 to 3 years already. In addition, 79% of recent sellers wished that they had listed their home earlier when the market was hotter. 79% of prospective sellers felt, quote, locked in by their current mortgage rate. And that's a talking point. Realtors are saying, we don't have enough sales because we're locked in. However, here's the punchline. Even though almost 80% feel locked in by their current mortgage rate, almost 30% said they plan to sell anyway for personal reasons.
Well, of course, because, you know, that is fascinating. There's that much pent-up demand to sell.
Yes.
Right? You know, there's no doubt in my mind, and Julie, I know you read real estate stuff as much as I do, if not more so. Have you seen or come across a single bit of data anywhere that would lead you to believe that we're not at the very beginning of what's going to be the biggest boom in real estate?
No, in fact, most things are pointing upwards. For example, inventory. That was one of the biggest reasons we didn't have more sales. You know, I think people are getting used to 7 plus interest rates. So that's become a bit more normal than it was, say, a year ago. So that's all good. And the fact that we still have 3-to-1 ratio, 3 offers for every 1 home sold, that by itself, you could lead with just that stat. And that shows you there's 3 times the buyers as there are listings. And there was another stat that came out today, which was estimated by the National Home Builders Association. They believe that we're missing still, even with more inventory, 1.5 million more listings. But they're building it slowly, and it is coming. So yeah, I'm enthusiastic, just as you are.
Well, yeah. I mean, it all points to the same thing. It's the demographics. It's the sheer supply and demand. If you look at the demand for, you know, resale, new construction, doesn't matter. It outpaces clearly. Julie knows on the resale side, it's what, 3-to-1, 3 offers for every 1 resale listing. And on new construction, I'm sure they're experiencing similar things. Whereas it really, if you want to know what direction the market's going to go, it doesn't matter whether you're selling banjos or you're selling, you know, Band-Aids. You just got to look to see what the essentially the demand is going to be. And if we know the demand for housing is going to only increase because the sheer number of humans making, you know, more humans and family formation and the rest of it, we're just looking at something that's going to be unprecedented in the history of real estate. So please do your best to set aside anything that takes the wind out of your sails, that makes you believe that you're not in the right place at the right time. And I guess one of the biggest things that will really cause you to question yourself is if your real estate listing isn't selling. How about that for a transition?
That was a great transition. So today, nice prequel there. Today we're going to discuss 6 specific reasons, and yes, price is one of them, that are probably causing your listing to sit on the market. Now, here's a fact. Homes, and you guys know this, that are transactional, homes are either selling immediately or they're sitting on the market for 30, 60, or even 90 days. Don't let your listing expire and don't get fired. Be the listing agent when it sells.
So here's something, Julie and I, every day, we use a software app called Monarch. You guys should use it as well. It's a great way to put all of your financial information in one place. Well, Monarch also ports in all of the information on all of our individual rentals. Julie and I are LPs. We own some, you know, condo developments or partial owners, but we also own a lot of individual homes that we've been buying for the last 30 years, basically. So we watch the values on those things. And what is really fascinating is, you know, like, essentially you'll see what the, you know, the trajectory of the value of a particular house is. Then it, sometimes you have to go to realtor.com and look, but it'll tell you about all the new listings. Well, what I've been seeing is this cycle in all the markets where we have rental properties, and I suspect it's all the markets, as you and I have rental properties in many different markets in many different states, mm-hmm. That we are seeing this trend where houses are selling for less than 10 days. Mm-hmm. So you'll see a new listing come for sale. The pattern seems to be Monday or Tuesday, coming soon or whatever, and then basically goes active on Friday and it's in contract by Monday. That seems to be the cycle all over the country. Now, if you are somebody that put your house, you know, coming soon is on Monday, and then you put it active on Friday and you don't have an offer by the following Monday, what's going to happen is the market's going to wonder why that listing didn't sell. A lot of the buyers are going to assume it got passed over for some reason that, you know, maybe they're just going to assume kind of worst case scenario. And then you're dealing with a batch of new pendings or new coming soons that are hitting the market the following week. You guys get it? So what happens is if you don't follow Julie's rules that she's about to lay out for you in this podcast, and you don't get things positioned correctly when you put the house for sale, it does not take long for your listing to appear as spoiled milk.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, the market does have these radically low expectations because we've had years of 0 days on the market, 22 seconds on the market, multiple offers, over list price. That still seems to be a lingering expectation. So we're going to go over these 6 points. And for some of you, you are kind of losing it after weekend number two. Others, maybe a little bit more experienced agents, will give it a third weekend. But here nor there, your seller still expects it to be gone overnight.
That's where you're going to lose, is if you are an inexperienced listing agent and the seller essentially has the expectation, like all their neighbors' houses, that it'll be in contract in like, you know, 7 days, unrealistic as that may be in some markets, and you don't either set the expectations correctly when you take the listing, explain to them, you know, the whole process and really what it's going to, how long it's going to take to close and get in contract and the rest of it. If you're just allowing them to create their own expectation of your performance, you're probably going to get fired. And that's one of the biggest reasons why we're seeing so many expired listings across the country. Look in your own MLS for how many expired listings there are. You will be absolutely astonished, which, by the way, creates an enormous opportunity for agents
sure
that
does.
Are bold enough to go and pursue expired listings as a great business opportunity, which we always are advocates of. By the way, the notes for today's podcast, again, are only available on Harris Real Estate Daily newsletter, and so definitely subscribe to that right away. All right, Julie, let's go through this. Print these notes out, assume you got them from the newsletter, and use them for yourself, but maybe even use them when you're talking to a seller.
Yes, that's especially important on today's podcast because it is actually an evaluation using these 6 factors. But before we examine all of those factors, let's keep it real. Of course, price is one thing that overcomes all of the underlying reasons a listing isn't selling. However, to Tim's earlier point, the fastest way to get yourself fired from the listing is to always and only make it all about price.
Julie, should we assume that they know that price will ultimately overcome location or condition? Should we assume that, or is that a mistake?
I think it's a mistake. Probably.
Yeah, no, we're making a mistake assuming that they know that,
right?
And there's a script that goes along with this, and they will not get it right. So, Mr. Seller, there's 3 things that determine whether a house is going to sell or not: price, condition, location. So I've got some questions for you. Number one, Mr. Seller, are you planning on changing the condition of the house? I mean, it's a 4-bedroom. It's basically is what it is. The house is 30 years old, but are you planning on adding a 5th bedroom or doing a major kitchen remodel? Are you planning on doing anything to really the condition of the property? And the seller's going to say no. Well, then the next question, Mr. Seller, is can we actually have can we change the location? I mean, the location's, you know, it's not bad, but there is a freeway that you can occasionally hear when the wind is blowing a certain way, you know, that's only a 1/2 mile away, but the location is what it is. We can't really change the location, correct, Mr. Seller? And they're going to say yes. So the only other thing that we can have a positive effect on is the price. And Mr. Seller, right now, the market is telling us that we're not, you know, the buyers are telling us that we're not meeting their expectations. Or put it in another way, we should reposition the house on the market so we correctly reflect the market's expectations. Don't say lower the price. And when you put all these thoughts together, the seller, you know, and there is a strategy to this. You don't want to just, you know, hit the seller over the head with a lower the price bat. You need to work them into that. But that goes back to what I was saying a second ago, where you're setting the expectations when you take the listing. So after you get the listing contract signed in our listing process, then you're going to give them essentially a seller's manual. What's it called? Complete Home Selling Guide?
Yes, you
got
it.
Mm-hmm. And then it's going to tell them exactly what should happen along the way so they don't have to create their alternative or their own reality. You're going to give them this manual that we've already created for you. It's part of Premier Coaching. And you're going to say, Mr. Seller, this is what happens next. And that will save you from having to worry about them calling and freaking out because they're going to have the manual that they should lean into. So these are all thoughts that you should be having if you're serious about being a listing agent.
I hope you guys caught that script. You said you weren't going to get that exactly right. That was pretty textbook. Nice job.
Well, it's a simple script, right?
You used it many times. And it works. That's the most important thing.
Well, it's because ultimately, guys, a correctly priced or even if it's got a bad location or bad condition, a price will overcome all other obstacles. Just will. And here's the flip side to it. You can have superior location. Like if any of those three are out of balance, you're not going to get a sale. But the thing that's going to kill the sale the most is the price. That's the thing. Because buyers in most price ranges, now, oddly enough, when you get into really luxury real estate, beachfront, things like that, price really doesn't matter that much. Oddly enough, it is something that people are not sensitive to because there's so few of it. So again, know your market, know your clients.
Adjust accordingly. Now, these next six points become your listing evaluation tool. So stay with me about how to use this. And of course, to get your listing evaluation tool, the official version of this, sign up for Premier Coaching by visiting premiercoaching.com. It is free, takes a few minutes. You can even do that while you're listening. So the six factors that make a home sell, rate each one on a scale of 1 to 10, and you'll know where you need to do the work to get it sold. A perfect score is 60. If you're scoring 60 on your listings, you're probably already pending or closed. But if your listing is not selling, it's not likely to score that high. Your job is to figure out why. So let's first talk about number one, condition. When there's little competition and more buyers than sellers to go around, condition does matter less. But as more listing inventory arrives on the market, and it is currently, while we're speaking, there's more listings that just hit, especially if any of it's new construction, the pressure increases to present your listing in its best light. Even if you're the only home for sale in the MLS code, you owe it to your sellers to help them stage it to get the best results. They'll sell faster and for more money. So rate your listing's condition on a scale of 1 to 10. What makes your condition rating low? Any or all of the following, and we won't even be super gross here. We're sure you have more to add based on your showing experience and listing experience. But what makes for a low condition rating? Well, questionable smells, or possibly worse, unidentifiable smells. Sometimes if you do know, it's even worse. Identifiable but gross. Cat pee, dog poo, curry, cigarette, or cigar smoke. Invest in an air ionizer. You can get those on Amazon, or remove the carpet or the furniture, whatever's causing the odor. Stop waiting for a buyer who loves the smell of cat pee or who doesn't notice the smoke or odor. We also have on the list bugs, mold or mildew in the bathrooms, kitchen or basement, rodents, rodent droppings, dirty floors, clutter-covered countertops, crusty-looking appliances, dirty window screens, terrible or boring curb appeal, dead grass, weeds, green pool, if you're in a pool type of environment, and the list goes on. So you can refer to the Proven Home Selling System if you're a Premier Coaching client for the How to Prepare My Home guide so that you're looking at this as a checklist and knocking all of those things out. Fixing even a few of these items, if that's what the issue is with your listing, you know, maybe it costs a few hours and $100, $1,000. It's going to net your seller a lot more, and it's going to get a faster sale.
I remember our first year in real estate, I was working with that couple. I don't remember their names, but I remember what they looked like. And every time they ended up buying new construction. You remember this one? Yeah. I remember all the first year deals, even though there were over 100 of them, because we were, you know.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah, it was. Anyway, so this lady, I would open the door, and this couple would, she would just beeline right to the refrigerator. I know you heard what I said.
I remember this, yes.
She'd go right to the refrigerator. Every single time I would open up a door for a resale, she'd go right to the refrigerator. I ended up showing her probably 10 or 12 houses every single time, looked at nothing other than the refrigerator. And so eventually I asked her, like, are you hungry? You know?
What's the deal?
Are you, like, looking for something? I mean, because it was weird. She wouldn't even tell me. The behavior was, like, open the door and I'll rush to the kitchen, right? And then she told me that it was either her mom or her grandma told her the first thing she does, or you should do when you're considering buying somebody else's house,
resale,
is look at the refrigerator. Because if they don't keep their refrigerator clean, if the place where they store their food is a cesspool, you could just pretty much write the house off completely. And she had been doing that all the way along, which was honestly awesome advice from her grandma or whatever.
Well, it's a great filter. And you know, the other thing that's in that category is furnace filters and the dust on top of hot water tanks. People are sensitive to that stuff because the assumption is if you're not taking care of that, well, you're not taking care of anything else, just like the condition of the fridge.
The refrigerator, you have to.
I think that's
though.
Great. Because if, if that's gross, then your standards are
How many hot water tanks have you dusted in your life, Julie?
I haven't, but I have asked sellers to do it, so it looks like they care. Yes. Okay, so note to self, to your earlier point with your script, price will overcome the condition every time. I'll never forget back when we were selling, there's an agent that we did a lot of deals with named Alan. He had like the most honest listing, descriptions. And he put one in that said, it's disgusting and gross, but cheap. And it was like $20,000 under what it would have been. And it did get your attention. So you can do that too, because price will overcome the condition. The question becomes, how much lower do you have to go? It depends on what's wrong.
Probably being that honest in the MLS nowadays would get you in trouble.
Probably.
But I do remember that.
Yes, it was catchy. All right. Number two, remember, we're creating your listing evaluation. On a scale of 1 to 10, rate the location. You can't change this, so just rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. Remember Tim's script. We can't change the location. A low rating for a house that backs up to the freeway or sits at an intersection with a stop sign or lights shining right into their front room. A low rating for a scary neighborhood or a hoarder next door, in the flight path or near a busy railroad crossing. A great location is a safe neighborhood with sidewalks, tree-lined streets. Everybody wants to move there. And again, note to self, price also overcomes location. I think about things like being the first house in the subdivision, you know, you're right there with a stop sign and a busy road. Well, it's going to sell for less. The only question is for how much less.
There's so many little nuanced things in the neighborhood. For example, the stop sign thing. When people are hitting the stop sign, are the headlights at night going right into a house? Well, that house is going to be worth less than the house on either side of it. But I'm just going to tell a funny story. You'll remember this one too. So we were going on a listing appointment. The house was probably $450,000 or something, you know, $500,000. And it was a beautiful house, and it had a really big lot, but it backed up to a freaking freeway.
I remember this. It was like a big, beautiful treed lot, and went down in a ravine, but then it went up, and there was the on-ramp.
Yeah, but he had a lot of great landscaping and whatnot back there. So anyway, it was an expired listing, maybe even expired twice. But we knew the location. We knew that we could get it sold. The seller was going to have to obviously, you know, overcome the objections with adjustment to his price. We walked into the house, put our stuff down, whole thing, and then he walks us in the backyard. And back in the yard in this grove of trees, next to the actual barrier that's supposed to keep the noise out from the freeway, he had created this little meditation thing. I'm not making this up.
His oasis, remember this.
His little oasis. It was so...
It was like a hammock in there.
Well, it was crazy. It was like a little campsite. And it was right next to the freaking road. And it was so loud that like we had to we couldn't even hear him talking. You could hear like every third word, you know. And then as we were walking back, I heard him describing how it reminds him of the ocean, the freeway noise. This seller was trying to convince us was like the ocean noise, and that's the reason that there shouldn't be any kind of problem getting a house sold the back to a freeway.
I know, and I remember I could almost give you the address of that house. I remember not only was it the on-ramp, but it also, right in back of his yard, had the gigantic, I never realized how big those overpass signs are, and it lit up at night, so you couldn't even have peace at night.
Well, so it was the ocean at night, Julie, and the light from the sign was similar to the moon, exactly.
Exactly.
Well, but so sellers are often going to be a little delusional about their location because maybe they've just learned to live with it.
He was trying.
But believe it or not, location actually has a big, you should not be surprised, but an appraisal will actually appraise a house that's got an inferior lot like that, even though it's bigger. It'll get a ding. It won't be as worth as much as one that doesn't have that kind of issue. So these are all just facts, but this is all the nuanced stuff. It's so bizarre. When you get into real estate more, you hear growing up, there's the right side of the road and the wrong side of the road. Mm-hmm. There really are right sides of the roads and wrong sides of the road, depending on, sometimes it's as easy as like the direction of the breeze blows. I mean, Julie and I have had coaching clients in Texas and in California, where you can have this whole big neighborhood, but half the neighborhood, essentially, the wind will, you know, blow over the neighborhood, but downstream, like not even that frequently, but there's a freaking hog farm. And so half the neighborhood will smell like, you know, nastiness for just a few times a year, but that's enough to make those houses worthless. But if you don't know that, you know, you're going to have some problems when it becomes being a listing agent. Mm-hmm. This is the reason that technology and AI will never actually replace agents, because it's all this nuanced information that goes far beyond price, condition, location, cost per square foot, replacement value, and all the rest of it. It's the nuanced differences in every neighborhood that makes you guys always have value.
Very well stated. And I think it's also important that you are previewing as much as possible so that you get your own radar, like like we have after thousands of transactions, you'll start to develop that too. That's going to serve you well in your listing appointments, even on the buyer side when you're deciding what to offer. So point number three in your listing evaluation, the number and frequency of showings that your listing is getting weekly. Rate your listing on a scale of 1 to 10. If you have slow or no showings, according to the National Association of Realtors, not just according to us, you are likely to be about 10% overpriced. If you have consistent showings but no offers, you are usually 3 to 5% overpriced. So rate your listing high if you're getting lots of showings, and second showings especially, you're close to selling it. Rate it low if nobody seems to know that it exists. You go days or weeks between showings. You can't even rate that a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10 if it just seems like crickets.
Advanced coaching. If you're getting a lot of showings from the same buyer agent and they're showing it to the same buyer, but they're not writing offers, chances are you're just dealing with a weak agent that doesn't know how to, if the word isn't even close, it's probably just asked the buyer to buy it. The buyer wants to buy the house. That's the reason they keep coming back. And this inexperienced agent is just waiting for somehow the buyer to say, okay, let's buy it. Whereas that should have been their job. You're going to actually have to, in some cases, make an offer from the seller to sell the house to the buyer. In other words, normally you get an offer from the buyer to buy, offer to the buyer to purchase. You're going to have to make an offer from the seller going the opposite direction to sell the house to that buyer. Julie and I learned to do this when we were selling real estate, and that resulted in, you know, frankly, dozens if not hundreds of transactions. And this was a huge problem every spring and summer, because that's when the new agents would come out of the woodwork.
It's true. It's absolutely true. And it's okay if you're one of those new agents. We're educating you that that does exist. A seller's offer to buyers, what most markets call it. And especially in states where you have rules like Texas does, where you're literally not allowed to make up your own addendums or offers. Those, like the TREC, Texas Board of, what is it, the commission site, they have like 200 forms. You can find it already written, the seller's offer to buyer, with the right language. So if you're not sure how to do that, call your board, you know, talk to your broker and figure out how to do that. I know it might be unusual, but it's very effective.
But the flip side, Julie, is if you're not getting a lot of showings, especially in the first 2 weeks, you definitely have a price problem. So make sure, by the way, that Julie was describing a graph that we actually have as far as Premier Coaching that you're supposed to present to the sellers, which will make it very clear. So Mr. Seller, in the first 2 weeks or 10 showings, if in this first 2 weeks, if we don't have, what is it, Julie? Help me remind me.
An offer that we can at least counter offer.
Right. So in the first 2 weeks, if we don't have 10 showings or a verified written offer, right. It just clicked
there
in my head. We need to reduce the price usually, or we need to reposition the house in the market by probably at least 10%, so we're in alignment with the market's expectations. These are all scripts and techniques that you need to be sharing with the seller as the listing goes active, so that if that time does pass, you're not arm wrestling with the seller for a price reduction. Point number four.
Yes, very well stated. Thank you. So number four, you're going to rate on a scale of 1 to 10 your current price versus the price of competing homes. For example, rate your listing a 10 when we look at it online and it seems to be well priced for the amenities, and we can't just go buy a new home around the corner for $15,000 more than your listing. In other words, it totally makes sense. You almost say, why hasn't this sold yet? It looks so good. A low rating is if you're obviously overpriced compared to the competition, such as a 2-bedroom priced as if it's a 3-bedroom, or a no-car garage house or a condo priced like it's a 2-car garage unit. So remember that price overcomes the competition. Again, adjust accordingly. The biggest threat to this is, of course, new construction. But you also have to make sense. If you're, especially as we see, more inventory online, if I'm searching for a buyer and I get 10 listings that meet their criteria for neighborhood, school district, square footage, you know, and age, and you look out of sync with the rest of them, then you're going to look obviously overpriced, or you might look like you're a deal depending on how you work it.
Jules just touched on something. If you're in a market where you're competing against new construction, trust your coaches, Tim and Julie Harris. New construction will almost always hand resale its ass. So the sellers aren't going to be dialed into that, and they might even, your sellers might even be delusional about the impact of new construction. Even if it's not exactly in the same community, it could be a couple communities over. Mm-hmm. Because why? New construction is usually bigger, nicer, and with better financing. And that's going to suck the life out of the resale listings. So you're going to have to take the sellers, your sellers out there, or ask them to go on their own and preview the new construction just to open their eyes up to what their true competition is. You might be selling real estate where there's not a lot of listings. Again, and the sellers are going to sort of mentally and emotionally be greedy. Oh, I only have 2 other houses I'm competing against, and mine's better because of this. Well, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes away, there's this new construction subdivision. That's where those buyers are going to go. So you're going to have to open their eyes to everything. And if you are selling in such an area, which most of you are with new construction, do what we coach you to do in Premier Coaching and absolutely align yourself with those new construction builders, because in many markets, they will control the market for some time to come.
That's right. And if you are unclear, especially agents are so dependent on the MLS, here's some homework for you. Let's say you're sitting there with a listing, or some of you more than one listing that's not selling. Let's say that that's in 43085, which we know like the back of our hand, where that's, you know, older inventory, very low inventory, very competitive, popular school district.
Well, it's landlocked too. You can't
build
anymore.
But it's landlocked. But here's what I would do. If I had something that wasn't selling and I wasn't sure if I'm competing against new construction, I'm going to type into Google new construction 43085, 20 mile radius.
Or just put in, you can do it this way too, Julie. Mm-hmm. Just go to Google and just do it without the radius words.
Yep.
And then all the other new construction people that are competing with that particular 43085 zip code, they're going to then have been running probably pay-per-click ads to try to steal those buyers away.
That's
the other way you're going to know who's trying to compete. And it might be, it doesn't have to be one of these big, massive, publicly traded builders. It could just be Bob and Steve's builders, you know, and they're, you know, running a little subdivision with 20 houses.
Yeah. Now, in the case of our example, maybe I'm convinced, well, gosh, there's no new construction 43085. I don't see anything, but I do your search and I find oceans of it in Delaware County, which is a 15-minute drive with fairly competitive school district. If I'm a buyer, I'm absolutely going to consider that. I go there and then I see the builders throwing money to buy down my interest rate. I'm just going to break up with 43085 at that point.
Right.
So that's good homework for you guys to do. All right, point number five, and this is a black hole of problems, potentially. So stay with me on this.
Okay.
And that is good old-fashioned seller's level of cooperation. Rate your listing on a scale of 1 to 10. Is the seller preparing the home prior to showings by making beds and keeping the dishes done? Are they turning on all the lights and getting the man-eating dogs out of the house? Do they have, or cats, I guess.
Julie, that's sexist. It could be women eating dogs.
It could be. People eating dogs, yeah. Cats, lizards, I don't know.
Exactly.
Do they have it? My coaching clients had a problem with the snakes, like aquarium after aquarium of snakes in the basement.
And Julie had a coaching client who basically, was it their seller that had a support pony?
A support pony, yes. The feedback was, smells like a zoo. So she
really?
Went there and... Sure enough, there were horse droppings. So the list goes on. Do they have too many showing restrictions? That's a problem with cooperation. Do you have too many showing instructions? Maybe it's hard to get through the security gate, or maybe you insist on going to every showing, but you're not that easy to schedule with. So note to self, price may overcome lack of cooperation, but it must be much lower if that's like curb offers only type of thing. Ask yourself if you want the home to sell more than the seller does. You may have a non-listing. Sometimes sellers' lack of cooperation is... maybe one of the spouses isn't that into selling.
Well, this is the reason, Julie, it always goes back to pre-qualifying.
Exactly. You should have vetted this out. Now, that can change with, you know, maybe their jobs change or something. But you have to really get to the bottom of it and have those honest conversations. You can say to a seller, sometimes it seems like I'm wanting this to sell more than you are. Here are the things that I'm seeing that maybe we need to correct, assuming you really need this to sell.
But honestly, you shouldn't have any of these even slightly adversarial conversations with the seller if you fully pre-qualified them.
Yep.
And if they have to sell when you pre-qualified them, you know what their have to sell date is or date range is, and you just got to work them backwards from that. They might have unrealistic expectations, you know, maybe their mind's still in the market from 3 years ago, so they're going to have to be brought up to, you know, current expectations, and that's really your job. But I'll tell you, one of the things that you should always have in your back pocket, if it works, is literally remove the seller. If the house is basically a pigsty.
And their stuff.
And their stuff, right. Definitely their stuff. And it just is really, you're walking through it, you're going to think there's never going to be a time when this house is going to be truly showable. And the sellers aren't willing to discount the house so that it overcomes the condition. Mm-hmm. If they can, you should suggest that the seller, you know, moves, and then you put the house for sale after you do a light rehab on it. Do the math for them. Explain to them that it's a hassle factor for them. You don't need to make them feel bad and tell them that they're, you know, living in a, you know.
Hoarders.
Right.
Whatever.
But move them out. And then, you know, oh, we're going to do this new construction house is going to be done in 90 days. Well, let's move you into the new construction house, assuming the math works, and then put it for sale after they're gone.
Yeah.
That will make an enormous amount of it'll actually net them more money and make it so the house sells faster. Because, again, the challenge that you guys are all going to have, even though you've got exclusive listing contract signed, if the seller wants to fire you, I've never run across a broker that doesn't release the listing. In other words, you might have a contract signed for 90 days or 180 days to get the property sold. But if that seller decides that you're poison, they're going to get rid of you no matter what. And
it's
no one's going to put up a fight to try to keep a seller you know, and the seller can just decide to stop showing. You know, you guys get my point?
Well, this is why you do pre-qualification, which you get in Premier Coaching, because you would have had those conversations and actually, if you're doing a great job as a listing agent, formulated a plan in those situations. Right. Are they relocating, downsizing, becoming empty nesters, going to assisted living? What is the plan? It's part of your job to advocate for them having a smooth transition fighting with them.
You're looking for sellers that have to sell. And most sellers have to sell. Those of you who have had listings, right? And Julie's going to point number six, so I don't want to stomp on our point number six.
Well, that was a good ramp up to it because it's related, but point number six is rate your seller's level of motivation. Is the seller going to sell only if they get their price? And is that price reasonable if you fix the other items on the list that we just discussed? Or are they just too aspirationally priced for the market?
That's a nice way of saying they're overpriced and being greedy, but it is aspirationally priced, so you guys can adopt that when talking with sellers.
Yes, if sellers don't have to sell, they're far less likely to cooperate and adjust the price or fix the condition issues to reflect the market's expectations.
So let me interject something here. The reason a seller overprices isn't because they're being greedy, it's because of their ego. And I know that sounds like, what the hell are you talking about, Tim? You know, so without even talking about whether ego is a real thing or not, let's just focus on what the popular understanding of what ego is. So a seller thinks there, anytime you own something, dear listener, notice how it automatically is worth more.
Yep.
What's that all about? You can go out and buy a new whatever car today, and there's 1,000 of them that also sold, and you want to go and sell it in 30 days. Somehow, yours is worth more than all the others that basically might also be for sale. Yeah. The same goes with real estate. A lot of sellers will get a lot of their, you know, they'll be wrapped up into what, you know, what do you mean they don't like my tile in the bathroom that I did when I was half drunk, you know, 5 years ago, and none of it, the tile are straight. I mean, right? It's modern art after all.
Well, it is. And you'll remember a quick story. You remember Oscar?
Oh, yeah.
The Oscar's house is where I learned in the prequal when the seller says it's been fully rehabbed to ask in what year.
Let me tell the whole story. Yeah. All right. So there was this perennial FSBO that was in one of the markets we sold in, which was 43214. And there was this really, really nice guy who built his house in the 1960s. And he and his wife kept this house pristine. Now, so if you were living out in Palm Desert, you would have loved this house. And especially because all the furniture in it was exactly the way it was in 1960, probably.
Kind of mid-century modern flavor.
I actually kind of liked it, but everything was a shade of green, which was whack. All right, so here's what Oscar would do. Every year in the spring, he'd put his house for sale. And he'd been doing this for years. This was when Julie and I first got our licenses. It turns out what Oscar was doing is Oscar was like a big spider who was building a web every year. And as soon as any, you know, real estate agents would show up, well, you'd want to see the house. And sure, Oscar's thinking about selling, you know, when pigs fly, it turns out. But what Oscar's real bag was is Oscar sold jewelry. And so what you would do when you went over to, you know, see Oscar's house is, sure enough, you'd be buying jewelry. Julie bought a really pretty tennis bracelet and some earrings. I mean, he would do that every year. Isn't that funny? So that was just, sometimes you get for sale by owners that are what we call social sellers. That's what Julie and I ended up calling.
Social FSBO, yeah.
Yeah, they just want to, you know, show you their garden or make friends.
Want to get to know people.
Exactly.
So, yes.
That's the story of Oscar.
Someday I'm going to put together that book. All right. So we have talked about all six factors. What is the overall score when you add up points 1 through 6? Take one of your sample listings that's been on the market a bit too long. Where does it have the lowest scores? What does the feedback tell you after showings? Are you even getting feedback? The lower scores show you what has to be fixed to sell the home. What can you do to score closer to 60 points? Now, I think that you probably picked up that if your seller, or in some cases you, if you're the one making the showing restrictions perhaps, but if you're not willing or able to fix the other things, the only thing you're left with is price. And if you have problems in any of the other categories, you may have to come down in price more as a result of having multiple issues. I used to say a house can have one issue and be moderately priced and it'll still sell. But if you have two issues, you have three issues, you know, it's got a questionable foundation and it smells funny and it's on a corner and you're overpriced, now you've got a problem.
That's the premise of a good script. So basically, as pricing, condition, location, you can have location a little, you know, askew. You can have condition a little askew. You can even have of the price a little bit wrong. That's all. One of those things are okay. A little bit wrong on price, not a lot wrong. But if you have two things wrong, the house isn't going to sell. And if this all goes back to pre-qualifying. If you didn't, you know, Julie had that as point number five, but should have maybe been point number one. You got to pre-qualify the hell out of every seller so you know exactly what their motivation and time frames are. You have to know what they owe. You have to know how many loans that they have. I mean, not in this market so much, but in previous markets, it was normal to run into a home that had 2 and 3 loans on it. And then there was a construction lien. And sure enough, once the house sells, the seller was going to be upside down by 50 grand and the seller didn't know it. And you should have known it. And now you're at the closing table and the house isn't going to close because the seller has to somehow magically come up with 50 grand. Oh, he can't come up with 50 grand. Guess the first thing they're going to go after? Your commission. You guys get it? This all goes back to pre-qualifying and being a professional. And that's really the reason every single one of you should be joining Premier Coaching. Premier Coaching is the next natural step for all of you. Hundreds of you join Premier Coaching every single month. And for now, I think for the next probably 30 days, we're going to continue to allow you guys to join for the first 30 days for free. And yes, that does include a daily semi-private coaching call with one of our Harris certified coaches. If you want to be part of what's next in real estate, I just told you how to do it. Join Premier Coaching. So hopefully you love these notes. You love this podcast. I know you did because this continues to be the number one listened to daily podcast for real estate professionals in at least the United States. Have a fantastic day. We'll talk with you on the show tomorrow.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.